Talk about Asara B'Teves today, but we're going to branch out to the 8th and 9th as well. I think you'll hear some very, very interesting and quite amazing information about the 8th and 9th of Teves that is not so widely known. But first, let us start with the halachically mandated fast, which is the 10th of Teves. And in truth, the Navi Zechariah already tells us that there are four fast days that must be observed to commemorate the various events surrounding the Churban Beis Hamikdash. And of course, Zechariah lived at the time of the destruction of the first temple and at the very beginning of the second temple. And Zechariah, interestingly enough, does not refer to the fast days by a date in the month, but only by the month. He talks about Tzom HaRevi. There is the fast of the fourth month. We always count from Nisan. So that's Nisan, Iyar, Siv, and Tammuz, which is initially the ninth of Tammuz, later it became the 17th of Tammuz. Tzom HaChamishi, the fast of the fifth month, which of course is the month of Av. Tzom HaShavi'i, the fast of the seventh month, which is Tishrei, but he's not referring to Yom Kippur. That's in the Torah. He's referring to Tzom Gedalia. And the last one mentioned is Tzom HaAsiri, the fast of the 10th month, again counting from Nisan, and that would be Teves. And the Navi Zechariah says that these days that are fast days and days of mourning, when the Beis HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt, they are going to become days of Sason and Simcha. But it is interesting that the fast days, even the 9th of Av, is not described as being connected to a particular date. It's only connected to a particular month. In fact, the poskim say that this is the halachic justification why, when it falls on Shabbos, we push it off. Even the 9th of Av, if the 9th of Av falls out on Shabbos, we fast on the 10th of Av, Motzoi Shabbos, and Sunday. And the reason is because when the Navi pronounced these days as fast days, again, B'Shem Hashem, he did not halachically describe it in terms of an actual date. It was halachically described in terms of a month. So although we normally observe it on the anniversary of the particular event, for example, the 9th of Av is observed on the 9th of Av, but halachically, if there is a need to push it off, you can do so, because that is not a contradiction to the prophetic edict, because the prophetic edict said there has to be a fast in the fifth month, the fourth month, the seventh month, the 10th month, but it doesn't have to be that day. Interestingly enough, however, Rav Yosef Karo, the Beis Yosef, brings, in the name of the Avud Raham, who was one of the great commentators on Tefillah, that Asara B'Teves would actually be very different. If it would be possible for Asara B'Teves to occur on Shabbos, and based on the calendar, it's impossible, because based on the days of Rosh Hashanah, it will never occur on Shabbos. So this is a hypothetical. But based on that, if Asara B'Teves would ever fall on Shabbos, we would actually fast even on Shabbos. Why is that so? Well, in terms of the pasuk in Zechariah, Asara B'Teves is no different than any other of the fast. It is simply called Tzom HaAsiri, the fast of the 10th month. But if you look in the Navi Yechezkel, now remember, just to put Yechezkel in historical perspective, both Yechezkel and Yirmiyahu are contemporary prophets. They live during the very same era. But Yirmiyahu is in Eretz Yisrael, and Yechezkel was exiled to Bavel 11 years before the Churban, because the exile from to Bavel took place in two stages. Stage number one is called the Golos of Yechoniah, or the Golos of Yehoyachin, who was one of the last kings. And in that stage, the aristocracy, or according to Chazal, the Talmidei Chachamim, were exiled. But the Dalat Haaretz, the more impoverished, simple people, remained in the land for 11 years until there was the Churban. Mordechai, for example, was exiled in the first wave of exiles. That's why it says Megillas Esther, Asher Heglam Yerushalayim, Im Hagola, Asher Haglasa, Im Yechaniya Melech Yehuda. Right, that, remember in Megillas Esther, that's read with the tune of Eicha, because that refers, I would give you a musical rendition, but you probably wouldn't want to hear it. So what happened was that 11 years before the Churban, many, many notables were exiled to Bavel. Yechezkel was one of them. Yirmiyahu remained in Eretz Yisrael. So the bulk of Yechezkel's prophecies are about the Churban Beis Hamikdash in the interim between the Golus of Yehoyachin and the Churban Beis Hamikdash itself. In fact, it's very unique. He's the only Navi who was given a Nevuah in Chutz La'aretz. And at one point, Hashem tells him, Kisov es etzem hayom hazeh, write down on a piece of paper or parchment that on this very day, the 10th of Teves, Nebuchadnezzar in Yerushalayim is beginning the siege against the city that will culminate in the Churban Beis Hamikdash 3.5 years later. So the Avudram reasons, since the tragedy of Asara B'Teves in Yechezkel is described as Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, that very day, as opposed to simply the Chodesh, it is that very day that must be observed as a fast. Now again, there's a bit of a problem. That's even Docha Shabbos. It's even sets aside Shabbos. Now, Baruch Hashem, we're not going to ever have to test that proposition. There are some Achronim that argue with the Avudraham, but nevertheless, this is his theory. I will tell you that Asara B'Teves can take place on Friday, which itself is very unusual, and indeed we fast all the way till right before Shabbos. So in a sense, you already see that it's a bit more chamor than other fast days, but the Avudram says it would even be Docha Shabbos. Now, in reality, halachically, this is a bit of a problem, and the reason it's a bit of a problem is certainly in terms of severity, the 9th of Av is a much more chamor fast than the 10th of Teves. So why should it be that Tisha B'Av, if it's on Shabbos, we don't do? Shabbos is more important, but Asara B'Teves is more important than Shabbos. Why should that be? Halachically, there's no question that Asara B'Teves is a very lenient fast. If someone doesn't feel well, even if they're not seriously ill, we're very, very makel. In fact, in some Hasidic circles in particular, women are given almost an automatic rule that they don't have to fast on these days other than Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. And I understand that in some yeshivas and kollelim, that's a little strange to me, they also give the rule that they shouldn't bother to fast because they're weak because they're learning Torah. Okay. Now, yeah, thank you. Now, the thing is that some Mefarshim explain that the Isser Doraisa of fasting on Shabbos is only if it's a 24-hour fast. So consequently, you can't, Tisha B'Av is more severe, but the very fact that it's more severe because it's a 24-hour fast means you can't do it on Shabbos. As opposed to Asara B'Teves, which is not a 24-hour fast, there will be that possibility, but okay. But that's one halachic point I wanted to make. A second point I wanted to make about Asara B'Teves, because I do want to also cover the 8th and the 9th, is this. All of us know the well-known Gemara in Maseches Yuma that the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of the three sins that are so severe that a person must give up their life before they transgress. Avodah Zarah, idolatry, Gilui Arayos, sexual immorality, Shvichas Damim, murder. The second Beis HaMikdash, the Jews were largely observant. They were keeping mitzvahs. But the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed by the Romans because of sinas chinam, the hatred, the polarization, the dissension, the machlokes that existed among Jews. And the Gemara makes the beautiful and powerful point, Bo re'eh, come and see, that the first Beis HaMikdash, which was destroyed because of the worst Averos in the Torah, the Churban only lasted 70 years. And the second Beis HaMikdash, that was destroyed because of Sinat Chinam, we are still in the Golos. The Gemara wrote that more than 1,000 years ago, and let's just add 1,000 years to that as well. And therefore you see how severe Sinat Chinam is. I'm sure you'll hear about this throughout the day. I don't want to be Marich so much, but obviously we must think about Abbas Yisrael and building bridges and recognizing that the polarization and divisiveness is preventing Mashiach, preventing the Geula, expanding the Golos. But here is the point I want to make. The 9th of Av commemorates both the Chorban of the first Beis HaMikdash and the Chorban of the second Beis HaMikdash. The 17th of Tammuz, or at least the fast in Tammuz, commemorates both something that happened in the first temple when Nebuchadnezzar broke through the city. That happened to be in the 9th of Tammuz, but so Chazal didn't want to make two fast days. But the Tammuz event does commemorate the first Chorban and the second Chorban. But Asara B'Teves has no shaychus at all to the second Chorban. The only calamitous event that occurred on the 10th of Teves was Nebuchadnezzar, at the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, began his siege against Jerusalem. There is no corresponding Teves date with respect to the second Beis HaMikdash. Now that raises the following problem. The Rambam writes, and really it's obvious, that the purpose of every fast day is not simply to refrain from eating. You know, you can go to sleep for a whole day if you can manage it, and you know, you fulfill the fast. But the purpose of the fast day is contemplation, meditation, for the sins that caused this day to be a day of tragedy, and to resolve in our own lives to do tshuva, so that we could turn this into a joyous event. Right, that's why the old cliche, which is, you know, a meaningful cliche, have a meaningful fast. I don't know if this was invented in Silver Spring, where I come from, but no, I gather not. I see that other people say it as well. But that's a good thing. It's not have an easy fast. An easy fast? A fast is about feeling uncomfortable. But have a meaningful fast. And that makes a lot of sense, because a fast is about contemplation, meditation, thinking. And not thinking about what somebody else did wrong, but thinking about how could I rectify in my own life, in my own personality, those things that caused a Chorban. So here is the problem I want to share with you, and that is, Bishlama, in other words, with respect to the events of the second Chorban, 9th of Av, so I think about Sinas Chinam. And of course, Sinas Chinam is very much a problem that we face in the Jewish world, and maybe more so in Israel than elsewhere, because people are so divided over so many issues. But what am I supposed to think about on Asara B'Teves? Asara B'Teves is not about the second Beis HaMikdash, which is Sinat Chinam. It's about the first Beis HaMikdash, which is Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Damim. I'm not that bad. You know, when it comes to Sinat Chinam, okay, at least I'll say for myself, I have plenty of work to do on that. But Avodah Zarah, you know, that I haven't done. I have not bowed down to an idol recently. Gilui Arayos, I hope not. Shvichas Damim. In other words, how am I supposed to connect to Asara B'Teves, which is Nogeya, the first Chorban Beis HaMikdash, if, you know, even the worst of us generally don't have those Averas? So Rav Tzadok says a very, very beautiful thought. He says, Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Damim, on one hand are sins, but on the other hand, they are also symptoms of certain flaws in a person's personality, which in an extreme case may manifest themselves in Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Damim. But even if you don't have the symptoms, you can still have the disease. Now, how does that work? He points out that just as Pirkei Avos says Al shlosha devarim ha'olam omed. The world stands on three pillars, three positive pillars. Torah, avoda, gemilas chasadim, right? The learning of Torah, divine service, and acts of loving kindness, right? These are the three avos. Avraham is loving kindness, gemilas chesed. Yitzchak is avoda, divine service, korban. Yaakov, who spent 14 years in the yeshiva of Shem V'Aver, is Torah. So these are the three pillars that bring holiness into the world. There are three negative forces that destroy holiness in the world. And those three negative forces are kina. Kina is envy or jealousy. Taiva is excessive lust. Now, I say the word excessive because the Torah recognizes that, you know, we are allowed and we're even encouraged to enjoy the world to some degree. But if you're shakua, if you're too enmeshed in the sensual, the hedonistic, the materialistic, your heart cannot feel the presence of Hashem. So that's taiva. And the third is kavod. Kavod, looking for honor, ego gratification. Kina taiva v'kavod. Prokeyavo says, motziyin es ha'adam min ha'olam. They take a person out of the world. The Alter Slobodka used to say, this doesn't only mean you lose olam haba, that's for sure. But it means even your life in this world is miserable. Because when you're jealous and looking for kavod, then you'll never enjoy and you'll never appreciate the blessings Hashem has given you. Because you're always going to be looking at other people and other things and saying, they have it better. And of course, they may be looking at you and thinking the same thing. So here's what Rav Tzedek says. If you take kina to the extreme, it results in shfichas damim, in murder. In fact, statistically, that happens to be true. If you set aside terrorism and things like that, which unfortunately, you know, we have our share of, most murders are committed by people against people they know because they were jealous of something. They wanted, sometimes it might be as trivial, as literally stupid, as wanting a jacket or wanting a pair of sneakers. But jealousy can generate such a rage within a person that chas v'shalom, there could be shvichas damim. So therefore, shvichas damim is symptomatic of a jealousy that becomes obsessive and all-consuming. Taiva, when taken to an extreme, slides into gilui arayos. So even if a person does not commit gilui arayos, but the taivas might be there. And finally, kavod, this is already a little more abstract, is avodah zarah. Why is that so? Because avodah zarah is not just bowing down to an idol. But avodah zarah is anything in your life that becomes the central focus of your life, other than service of God, is idolatry. Idolatry can be politics, it can be communism, it can be Zionism, it can be capitalism. Idolatry can be self-idolization. I live my life to do what I want. And therefore, ultimately, when a person lives for his glory and his kavod, he's made himself an alternative to God. So Rav Tzedek's point is this. It is true that on Asara B'Teves, we are supposed to be thinking about the cardinal sins of Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shfichas Damim, because Asara B'Teves does not have a connection to the Bayis Sheni. It is only connected to the Bayis Rishon. But that doesn't mean that I am guilty of the particular sin of Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shfichas Damim. But the root causes of those sins are kina, envy, taiva, excessive preoccupation with materialism, and kavod, ego gratification and honor. And therefore, Rav Tzedek says, even if we don't have the symptoms, we might still have aspects of those diseases. So we look into our personalities and we ask ourselves, how best can I be misake? And this is based on the idea that Asara B'Teves is mechubar not to the Bayit Sheni, but it's mechubar to the Bayit Rishon. However, it's important to note that at least in some Makoros, there actually is a connection of Asara B'Teves to the Bayit Sheni as well. And that is, according to some sources, Mechiras Yosef occurred on Asara B'Teves. And that is a very fascinating point, because when we think about the epitome of what is called a Sinas Chinam, is the hatred of brother against brother that culminated in Mechiras Yosef. So it's interesting, just as Tisha B'Av became a day of mourning because of the chait of the Meraglim who returned to Moshe Rabbeinu, and they gave their report on the 8th of Av that the land is impossible to conquer and we don't have faith in Hashem. And the Jewish people, except for the women, cried that whole night of 9th of Av. And Hashem decreed, you have cried a b'chiyah shel chinam, you have cried for no reason. And this day will become a b'chiyah shel doros. So the 9th of Av became the day of Chorban because of the Chayna Meraglim. So too, the 10th of Teves became the beginning of the siege, the beginning of the end, because of the chait of Mechiras Yosef. So according to that, since Mechiras Yosef is the epitome of Sinat Chinam, it appears that Asara B'Teves is relevant not only to the Chorban Bayis Rishain, but to the Chorban Bayis Sheni as well. So there is a connection to both Batei Mikdash in the fast day of Asara B'Teves. You know that the brothers had all sorts of halachic excuses for what they did. You know, the Sephorno tells us that the brothers convened a Beis Din. They were the Beis Din. And the brothers paskened that Yosef deserves to die because he is trying to drive a wedge between them and their father, just as Yishmael was expelled from the heritage of Abraham, and Esav was expelled from the heritage of Yitzchak, and Yosef brings Lashon Hara to their father. They anticipate that if Yaakov hears this Lashon Hara, he will expel them, and this will affect not only them, but the future destiny of all of their generations. And therefore, they considered Yosef a rodef, a spiritual threat to their very life, not physical life, but their life of being connected to Hashem. And they adjudicated that Yosef was initially chayav misa, and then they reduced his sentence a little bit by saying, well, we sell him into slavery, that'll be good enough to get rid of him. So they had all the cheshbonos in the world, but Hashem looks at the heart and looks at the true motivation. And sometimes we think we act l'shem shamayim. We think we're doing the right thing. We think we're zealous for kavod of Hashem, when in reality it's our own jealousy and our own agenda that it's consuming us. In fact, it's been well said, whenever somebody says in an argument, it's not personal, it's a matter of principle, it almost always means it is something personal and not a matter of principle. As Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky gave a very beautiful way of testing yourself. Let's say you're upset because of something, and you insist, I'm upset because of the injustice, not because of me. So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said, would you be equally upset if this injustice were done to somebody else? Would you feel the same way? Usually not quite. So that by definition, therefore, it's not the abstract injustice, it's because of what came to you. So B'ezras Hashem, as we enter the 10th of Teves, may all of us be able to engage in the own cheshbon ha-nefesh, in which we try to be mesaken, not other people, and not to change other people, but to try to look into ourselves as to how we could be kinder, more sensitive, more understanding, and to look at the kina, the taiva, the kavod within our lives. And in that way, if more of us do that, we will be zeicha to a geula. But now, let's look at the 2 days before Asara B'Teves, the 8th and the 9th. It is brought down in the Shulchan Aruch a very, very unusual formulation. The Shulchan Aruch quotes, almost verbatim, an ancient sefer that goes back to the 8th century, the 700s, which is already after the Gemara, but it's pretty old, from the Gaonim's time. And the name of this sefer is called Megillas Tanis. Now, for the historians in the room, let me emphasize, this is not the famous Megillas Tanis. This is a less famous Megillas Tanis. The famous Megillas Tanis, which probably is not so famous either, but the better known Megillas Tanis is already before the Mishnah. That's dated before the Mishnah. And that is a list of days where you're not allowed to fast. So the name is a little confusing. A list of happy days that you're not allowed to fast, and many of these days are not observed today, but they represent holidays during the Bayit Sheni. That is the famous Megillas Tanis. And that is already earlier than the Mishnah. It actually was the first work of the oral law that was written down, even before the Mishnah. In fact, the story of Hanukkah is reported in Megillas Tanis. But the Megillas Tanis I'm referring to right now is a later work. And that is a list of a bunch of days that were observed as fast days, many of which we don't observe today. And Rav Yosef Cairo says he doesn't know who made this list, and he doesn't know the authority behind this list, and he makes the point that he's never heard of anybody that observed these days. But so he's not saying it as halacha, but he says, I'm going to record it anyway, because there may be tzaddikim that want to do extra fasting. And in this document, Megillas Tanis, we read the following. Yesh noagin. Now again, as I say, this is not authoritative. Rav Yosef Cairo himself says it's not binding. And he doesn't understand who did it, and he never heard anybody that did it. But he said, but Megillas Tanis, the second work, it says, some people have a minhag to fast on the 8th of Teves. And the reason is, the 8th of Teves was the day that the 70 elders completed the translation of the Torah into Greek, and the world was filled with darkness. Now here, the story of this is recounted in the Gemara. This is before the Hanukkah story. This is, as you know, when Alexander of Macedonia died, his empire was divided among different generals, and Ptolemy in Hebrew, but P-T-O-L-M-E-Y, got Egypt and North Africa, and Seleucus got Turkey and Syria, Asia Minor. Eretz Yisrael is a football going between Ptolemy and Seleucus. The Hanukkah story is Seleucus. Antiochus is the senate of Seleucus. But before the Hanukkah story, Eretz Yisrael was under the control of the Ptolemaic dynasty. This is before the Hanukkah story, around 200, 250 before the Common Era. Hanukkah is 100 years later. And Talmai HaMelech, his capital was, of course, Alexandria, this great city in Egypt, named after Alexander. And if you recall, in the library in Alexandria, which was considered to be one of the wonders of the world, it was like the Library of Congress or the National Library here, he wanted to have a copy of every book that existed. So he took 70 elders of the Jews and ordered them to translate the Torah into Greek. And he put the 70 elders in 70 different rooms. And with Ruach HaKodesh, they came up with the exact translation. And the Gemara indicates that some of the translations were not literal. But that's, for example, in Hebrew it says, Bereshit bara Elokim. In the beginning God created. But if you read it literally in Greek, it would mean the beginning created God. And that would imply God was created. So they changed the word order. In the list of non-kosher animals, the Torah mentions arnevet, which means a rabbit, but apparently the Greek word for rabbit was Mrs. Tolmie's name. So to say that she is like bunny, whatever it is, to say that she's a treif animal, so they managed to find a euphemism somehow. Now, this is called Targum HaShivim, the Targum of the 70, or we sometimes refer to it by the Greek term, the Septuagint. And in scholarly literature, it is actually called the LXX, which is just the Roman numeral, right, for that, and we still have it. Now, of course, most of us will not be able to read the Septuagint in Greek, so there are English translations of the Septuagint, etc., which are translation of a translation. Now, it's interesting. Let me point out that the Jewish community in Alexandria was very wealthy, very politically well-connected, and very assimilated. They greeted the Septuagint with great joy because most of them could not read Hebrew. In fact, there's a discussion in the Gemara about what is the halachic status of a Sefer Torah written in Greek. And the Gemara discusses maybe it's kosher because maybe that was Noach's bracha to Yefes. Yaftil l'kim l'Yefes, God will give beauty to Yefes, he will dwell in the tent of Shem. But the thing that you would always wonder is, who on earth would think of writing a Sefer Torah in Greek? Why? The answer is, there probably were Sefer Torah written in Greek. Even Philo of Alexandria, who may have been a religious Jew, and he certainly was the most learned Jew of that Kehila. Some have speculated, we're not sure, that perhaps even he did not know Hebrew. And he wrote commentaries on the Torah, but the commentaries were based on the Septuagint, which was earlier than him. So Philo records that there was a festival among the Alexandrian Jews that they would celebrate on the 8th of Teves, because that's when this great translation was made available to us. But Chazal viewed it a different way. Chazal viewed the 8th of Teves as a tragedy. And as a result, in this second Megillat Tanit, it is recorded, some people fasted on the 8th of Teves because of the Greek translation. Now, what is so tragic about it? I mean, after all, obviously, there was a Ruach HaKodesh involved. Hashem helped them translate it in a certain way. It was not a Tamei Dika event. So there are different interpretations. What is so tragic about it? One aspect of tragedy is by making the Torah accessible to non-Jewish hands, they can now interpret it, they can now distort it, they can introduce various ideas that are against the mitzvos and against the Torah, for example. So that's one idea. Also, by definition, every translation only captures one of the 70 interpretations of the Torah. But some have suggested the real tragedy was not that the Torah was made available to the Goyim, because after all, Moshe Rabbeinu also wrote the Torah in 70 languages so that everybody should know it. But the tragedy was that the Jewish people needed a translation. Now, I remember when the Art Scroll series first began, which is quite amazing. I don't know if you remember this, that Art Scroll was an invitation company. Rav Meir Zlotowitz, Alef HaShalom, who became one of the great Marbitzei Torah of the generation, he was a graphic artist, and he did invitations and ksuvas. A friend of his was Nifter, so he thought it would be a nice idea, l'zecher nishmaso, that by the Shloshim he would put out a little Megillas Esther anthology. And the Kavana was he'll do a Megillas Esther. It was a lot of work even to do that in 30 days. And then he'll go back to Kesuvos and invitations. What happened was that the Gedolim saw this, and they saw this was a wonderful, wonderful idea. And then the whole, what is called the Art Scroll Revolution, was created. Tanakh, the Siddur, which is the bestseller, the Siddur, by the way, is what finances everything else. The Siddur, all of Shas Bavli, Talmud Yerushalmi, the Medrash. Amazing, amazing thing. So I remember, though, when the Art Scroll first started taking off in the 1980s, So people were writing articles about how wonderful it was. But somebody, there's always somebody's little negative in things, somebody brought up the idea, well, you know, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing that it's available, but it's a sad thing that we needed it to be available. Because optimally, people should learn B'Lashon HaKodesh and see the actual language and the like. And this was the tragedy of the 8th of Teves, that you had an assimilated community that simply did not know Lashon HaKodesh at all and were not able to connect. So this is the Tainus Tzadikim, the Tainus of the righteous, on the 8th. So let's go back to the Mechaber's formulation. On the 8th day of Teves, some people fast because that was the day that the Targum of the Torah into Greek was completed and darkness came into the world. Okay. On the 9th day of Teves, some people fast, but we're not going to give you the reason. Very strange. Very strange. On the 10th day of Teves, that's the mandatory fast, because Nebuchadnezzar began his siege against Jerusalem. So this 9th day of Teves is quite a mystery.
Can you tell us, how does it put it in the Gemara that they're not giving a reason?
No, well, it doesn't say it in the Gemara, but lo nasnu bo chachamim tam. The chachamim did not give a reason for the 9th of Teves. So this creates a tremendous enigma. They didn't give a reason? Does it mean maybe the reason was forgotten? That's one possibility, but why would it be forgotten? And if it wasn't forgotten, why would they not want to give you a reason? Lo nasnu bo chachamim tam. So in the time we have left, I want to speak briefly about the mysterious Tainus Tzadikim of the 9th of Teves. Now, in the Selichos that we recite on Asara B'Teves, there is an explanation. It says that the 3 days, the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th, are days of devastation and tragedy. The 8th is the completion of the Torah in Greek. The 9th is the Yartzeit, the Petira, of Ezra HaSofer. And the 10th is Nebuchadnezzar began the siege against Yerushalayim. So the Selichos inform us that the tragedy that occurred on the 9th of Teves was the death of Ezra HaSofer. Now, why that's so tragic, one could understand, because Ezra is considered by Chazal to be the second Moshe Rabbeinu. Chazal say, and by the way, Zion Adar is also on this list of, right, Zion Adar is Moshe Rabbeinu's yahrzeit, and the Tzaddikim fasted on that day as well. So there's a symmetry. Ezra, 10th, 9th of Teves, Moshe, 7th of Adar. And the Gemara tells us, if the Torah would not have been given to Moshe, Ezra would have been worthy. Because Ezra was the one who, after the 70 years of exile, built up the Jewish people. He taught them mitzvos. He was mechanech, and he created the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. Without Ezra, we would not have known how to serve Hashem after the Chorban and the Golas. And therefore, the death of Ezra was a tragedy as great as the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's what the Selichos says. But the big question is, okay, so why does it say they didn't want, or they didn't give a reason? Give a good reason. You have a wonderful reason. The Yartzeit, the death of Ezra HaSofer. So Rav Yonason Apshitz says in his book of Drushas, Yaros Devash, that because Ezra is like Moshe, there has to be a certain commonality, and that is the following. With Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah makes the point that we don't know where Moshe Rabbeinu is buried. There's a concealment of his burial point. So the Rav Yonason wants to say the same way, right, the same way that there's an aspect of Moshe that is concealed, there's an aspect of Ezra that is concealed, but it's not the same concealment. It's not the concealment of his burial place. In fact, some places have identified his burial cover. but rather it is a concealment that this is the day that he died. Now, Rav Yonah Neibishtz's teretz is a dochak teretz. It's a bit of a forced teretz because it's not a symmetry. Moshe Rabbeinu was a concealment of the burial ground, and this is a concealment of the day. So because of this, there are other mephorshim that want to identify a different tragedy of the ninth of Teves. It may be that Ezra died, but that's not the tragedy that is unremarked. And that is, the Ramah writes, not in the Shulchan Aruch, but in his commentary on Megillas Esther, the Ramah wrote a perish on Megillas Esther called Mechir Yayin. The Ramah writes that it says in Megillas Esther that Esther was forcibly taken to the palace of Ahasuerus in the month of Teves. And although this turned out to be a wonderful thing for the Jewish people, it was a great tragedy that a tzaddikess was essentially taken forcibly and raped, essentially, by a goy. And therefore, there was the concept of fasting on the day. So again, now the Megillah doesn't say it was the ninth of Teves. It says the month of Teves. But the Ramah says, Efshar, it was the ninth of Teves. But the Chachamim didn't want to be explicit about the reason, because it would have created a certain shame or embarrassment to Esther, you know, in her neshama, to recount that she was forcibly seized on that particular day. This is what the Ramah says. They didn't want to talk about it in explicit terms. But again, there's no particular raya at all from the text in Megillas Esther that it was the ninth of Teves. It does say Teves, but it doesn't tell you when. So I'm going to share with you two other thoughts, which are quite unusual, and that is the mysterious fast of the ninth of Teves is connected to Christianity, and that is the following. Reason number one, which may not work out with calculations, but some want to suggest this, that the ninth of Teves was the day of the birth of Yeshu HaNotzri, Jesus of Nazareth. That according to, it's recorded by Rav Avram Rav Chia, a Rishon of the 11th century, that December 25th on the year of Yashka's birth fell out on the ninth of Teves. And therefore, it was decreed by some tzaddikim that that day should be a perpetual fast because of all of the devastation that his life and his belief and his religion inflicted on the Jewish people. But you understand why the Chachamim didn't want to give a reason, because if they were to say, we fast on Yashka's birth, that may cause a pogrom. Now, it's been pointed out that, first of all, we don't even know the exact year that Yashka was born, because the whole cheshbon of before the Common Era, after the Common Era, is off by a number of years. And second of all, it's not clear that he was born on December 25th. The Greek Orthodox Church pushes it into January. So the whole assumption of a Rav Avraham Chia that we're looking at December 25th of a particular year, and you then get it to be the ninth of Teves, number one, depends on, is December 25th the right date, and what is the right year, etc. So because of this, there is yet another Christian interpretation that's given, and this is truly amazing. And that is, it commemorates the death of a tzaddik, just like we fasted on Moshe Rabbeinu's. And the tzaddik that we are fasting for is a man called Shimon Kippa. Shimon Kippa is known in the Christian world as Peter, the Apostle Peter. What is going on here? Again, Shimon Kippa, in fact, that actually, just to show you the connection, in the Christian Bible, Lahavdol, again, forgive me for mentioning this, his name was Simon. Peter comes from rock. Right, Yashka said, you are my rock. So Kippa is Aramaic for rock. So Shimon Kippa is Simon Peter, who became known as Peter. What's the story? We're observing the tragic yahrzeit of Saint Peter.
Why is that?
So, there are midrashim. These are not from Chazal. These are later midrashim, so they don't have canonical status. That early Christians were all Jews, and they were functioning within Judaism. And as a result, many Jews were misled, just like today you have Jews for Yashka, etc. And the Sanhedrin met, and they said, we have to find a way to separate believers in Yashka from Judaism. Because if they remain within Judaism, they become a cancer that destroys us. So it mentions there was a man, Shimon Kippa, who got up and he said, I am willing to leave the Jewish people, become the leader of the Christians, to separate them, to drive them away, to tell them that we cannot be part of Judaism anymore because our religion is better. And my kavana will be l'shem shamayim to get the cancerous elements out of Klal Yisrael by making Christianity a separate religion and a separate grouping. But, he said, I will only do so if I'm given the haskama, the agreement of the Sanhedrin. And they said that l'shem shamayim do so. And it is recorded that Shimon Kippa moved to Rome, became pope, right, the first bishop of Rome, the first pope of Rome, is Peter. But it describes his life as he lived in isolation. He would, when he met with his followers, he would espouse Christianity. But in private, when no one was around, he kept the Torah and mitzvahs. And it is said, based on this tradition, that he saved Judaism and Klal Yisrael from being engulfed in Christianity. And when he died, the tzaddikim enacted that we will fast on his yahrzeit, that Hashem should elevate his soul, because his kavana was totally l'shem shamayim, but they didn't want to be mefarsem the reason, because this would be a reason that Jews wouldn't understand, and it would also be a reason that the Christians wouldn't understand. Hey, what are you claiming, Peter and the like? Shimon Kippa. If you look, you know, there's a collection of very obscure midrashim called Otsar Midrashim, which is a collection of very small midrashim, and in Chelek Beis of Otsar Midrashim, which is available for free on HebrewBooks.org, you will see the Medrash Shel Shimon Kippa, the story of Shimon Kippa. Now, to make this further, Shimon Kippa said what a tragedy it is for him that he will no longer be living with Jews. But he begged the Chachamim, please, please remember me in your tefillah. And it is recorded in some traditions that the prayer Nishmas that we recite every Shabbos and at the Pesach Seder was written by Shimon Kippa. Now, the Machzor Vitri brings such a tradition and says, Chas v'shalom, that is absolutely impossible. Okay, that's what the Machzor Vitri says. But other sources do say it. And in fact, there was a censored Rashi in Maseches Avodah Zarah, which is a very heavily censored Maseches. And the Rashi is not in our Gemara, but the censored Rashi in which Rashi says that Peter created the church, l'shem shamayim, in order that Christians should not infiltrate Judaism. That actually does appear in Rashi, and Rashi bases it on a famous or an infamous book called Toldos Yeshu, which is a Jewish recounting of the whole story of Yashka and the like. And indeed, it is recounted that Shimon Kippa died in Toldos Yeshu, which is earlier than Rashi. It is recited that Shimon Kippa died on the 9th of Teves, and that day was proclaimed a fast by various tzaddikim. So, very, very unusual. But indeed, we see that Hashem sometimes has very unusual life plans for people in which they could be going in all sorts of directions, but ultimately their kavana are l'shem shemayim. So these are the three fast days of the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th. B'ezus Hashem, we should be zechut to gula shleima, they should be l'sasein u'l'simcha. Thank you.